Dr. Seth Moore is the Director of Biology and Environment with the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa. Dr. Moore joins us regularly to talk about fisheries and wildlife research, in addition to environmental issues.
Well, today I'm going to talk about the second part of an ecosystem health project that I'm working on with the University of Minnesota, looking at how environmental toxins might be impacting different species in our region, and in particular, subsistence species, but also partly to evaluate the risk to humans from consumption of these different species. We met about a month ago with a large group of university faculty, some environmental toxicologists, several staff from our agency in Grand Portage, and we really started to identify the things that we want to look at for this particular project. The approach that we're going to use is to look at a bunch of different species in Grand Portage area and also in the 1854 ceded territory and try to measure some of these different toxins to see how prevalent they are in the different species that are consumed by the Grand Portage Band.
What are some of the environmental toxins that you'll be studying?
The things that we identified as being key components of environmental toxins that we are likely to see in subsistence species included heavy metals, which may include mercury, lead, or cadmium, some of which are transported atmospherically and some of which are transported through water. We're also interested in different chemicals that act as hormones or endocrines in animals. And so there are a lot of chemicals that are very persistent in the environment, and they act in a very similar manner as hormones do in different organisms. And those can have very pronounced effects. The other things that we're interested in are pharmaceutical residues. So there are a lot of pharmaceutical drugs used by humans that actually persist for a very long time in the environment. They actually have effects on animal species at very, very low levels. And sometimes the effects that they're designed for in humans are very different than the effects that they have on animals. And then we're also interested in looking at PCBs and dioxins and some other industrial types of pollutants.
Can you give us examples of some of the impacts of the toxins that you'll be studying?
Some interesting things that I learned when we were at this meeting was that these estrogen-like compounds, these are compounds that act like hormones in different species, are actually have a biological effectiveness at very, very tiny rates in the water, sometimes in as few parts per trillion as 3 or 4 or 5. So that's one molecule of this hormone per trillion particles of water. Those can actually have some biological impacts. And so some of the things that have been seen are fish species where the males don't fully mature in a sexual manner, or sometimes male species are being shifted to female species as a consequence of these different estrogen-like hormones. These hormones are actually coming either from human waste, from people who take birth control pills. Those hormones aren't very well filtered out by water treatment plants, or from the agricultural industry, where a lot of hormones are delivered to agricultural species, like cows, for example, to keep them lactating beyond the point when they have calves. This is for milk production. And so there are some very significant potential environmental impacts of use of hormones by humans, and this may actually impact species like fish or other animals. The heavy metals that we're interested in, particularly are mercury and some of the other ones that have developmental impacts on species. Mercury levels in this region are quite high in fish species. Most of this, we believe, is coming from atmospheric deposition. But mercury levels in some of our fish are so high that we actually have to have fish consumption advisories for several species, like large lake trout. Mercury levels in this area tend to come from either some of the mining operations that are happening either regionally or across the U.S. or from coal-fired power plants across the globe. But mercury lasts for quite some time in the atmosphere and is deposited fairly heavily in this region.
Does mercury impact the fish's health, or is a fish's lifespan so short that it would have no cumulative effects?
That's a really good question. Mercury levels impact fish themselves and also impact humans. So some of the mercury levels we've seen in some of our species are so high that they can actually impact reproductive rates of those particular species. So there are developmental impacts on the fish species itself, but also risk to humans that consume those fish.
And what fish species are most impacted by mercury?
The fish species that are most impacted are typically the predator species, the species that eat other fish. And the reason this happens is because heavy metals and many environmental toxins accumulate in fatty tissues. And so as fish eat other fish, they are eating all of the mercury that the other fish consumed, and it's being stored in their fat. And humans really like to eat predatory fish species. We like lake trout, which is a predator. We like pike and walleye, both of which are predators. Bass, you know, essentially most of the game fish and most of the fish that we eat tend to be predatory fish. Some exceptions to that are, you know, lake herring. They're fairly low on the food chain. They eat plankton. Whitefish tend to be a little bit lower than some of the other predatory species as well.
I often hear about PCBs and dioxins. Can you tell us more about those?
PCBs and dioxins come from industrial practices, paper plants, for example, oftentimes put dioxins into the water. The downside to PCBs and dioxins is they last in the environment for a very, very long time. They don't break down readily, and they're biologically active molecules as well. And so just like the heavy metals, they can bioaccumulate in organisms to the point that they cause developmental effects.
Have PCB levels and mercury declined in our area?
Many of these things are declining as a result of environmental regulations. But they're not declining in the subsistence species as fast as we would think they would. And mercury is definitely an anomaly to this. We've actually seen an increasing trend in mercury levels in fish, in both short-lived fish and long-lived fish. And this is paradoxical given the fact that there have been more intense mercury regulations. And in other regions, mercury levels seem to be dropping in biota. But in this region, they're actually increasing.
And so at this point, you're not really sure why mercury is increasing?
It's tough to say. We believe that 90% of the mercury that's deposited in this region comes from outside of this region. So it may be a consequence of, you know, coal-fired power plants across the globe rather than mercury that's being delivered into the atmosphere here in Minnesota. But we want to be able to look at this, and one technique that we want to use is called mercury fingerprinting, where we use stable isotopes to detect in our fish species the source from which that mercury came. And then we can learn if this is locally based mercury, regionally based, or somewhere much further away.
Well, thanks for talking to us today, and do you have some trivia to share?
I learned from my daughter that ants never sleep. And so apparently, when someone says they're busy as an ant, that's somebody that works 24/7 and never stops moving. But I thought that was really interesting because most species require some level of rest to sort of restore bodily functions and get things back into a state of equilibrium. Somehow ants have evolved to not need that.